Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line. Here's Shahan J. Hiraja and Babak Hayeri.
Hey, everybody. It's the College Football Survivor Show. I'm Babak Hayeri with my fabulous co-host, Shahan J. Hiraja, national college football writer for CBS Sports. We're glad to have you with us. It's been a busy week in college football as we get ready for the ultimate graduation ceremony. The NFL draft kicks off not long after we record this here on Thursday. This is a day where some of your favorite college football players become the NFL's problem. So we're going to take a little bit of time to talk about some of the under-the-radar sleeper guys who we think could surprise folks in the NFL, and maybe we'll close the show with a classic bust to remember. But before we begin, let me remind you can find us on X and TikTok at CFB Survivor Show, where we have video highlights of the show, run polls, and listen to your feedback. Please take a moment to like, rate, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. But it really has been a busy week. I know it interfered a little bit with our normal recording time. So, you know, Shahan, I know you were helping with a pretty significant event at your alma mater, the Golden Bruiser Awards. What's that all about?
Yeah, I was asked to come back to essentially host the university's athletic awards banquet. I'll tell you what, it was a lot of fun to get a chance to go back, and I'd never hosted an award show before. It was like 600 something people there, which I've never been in front of a crowd quite like that, but thankfully handled it all right. I will say, the crowd had a little bit of a senior spring to them. I don't think that they were paying the most attention just across the board, but they were happy with how I did. So that was a lot of fun. And actually, Tuesday and Wednesday, another thing that threw off our recording schedule was that the college football playoff meetings were actually taking place in DFW this week. And so I did get a chance to write on that. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about that next week when we have a little bit of time to digest. It's NFL draft week. There, you know, nothing else really matters other than that now.
Okay, you say that, but we talked about your alma mater. I'm just going to say, we are relieved that Reggie Bush finally got his Heisman Trophy back. I'm not going to rant about this because I absolutely could, but all I'm just going to say for those who hadn't been paying attention in the last, because some of this stuff is pretty dry, for the last 10 plus years, there was an 11-year long lawsuit between Reggie Bush's position coach, Todd McNair, and the NCAA at every step of the way. This is the old NCAA when they would fight you tooth and nail on every particular issue and just try to through attrition, kind of wear you down. And McNair kept winning on every single motion for his defamation case over this whole Reggie Bush debacle. And well, they eventually quietly settled a few years ago. And that was right when Reggie Bush was suing because people may have forgotten. He also filed a lawsuit a few years ago after NIL was passed to go at this. But now, finally, the Heisman Trophy Trust has decided to give it back to him. I mean, as many have noted, not long after they mourned the loss of previous Heisman Trophy winner and USC alumnus and actor and had done a few other things, O.J. Simpson. So after that, it really felt awkward that, yeah, you know what had happened back there. But I'm just going to note that. That was an interesting one. And
well, I think that actually what you're not mentioning enough is that over the last week, your alma mater, USC, has been the main character of college football, because you have the Reggie Bush story, you have O.J. Simpson dying, and then also, by the way, this episode will either come out late Thursday or early Friday, it might already be time. Caleb Williams might already be the number one pick in the 2024 NFL draft going to my Chicago Bears. So it's been a big week for the men of Southern Cal, so it's a... Now, again, a little bit of this way, a little bit of that way, but it all counts.
Yeah, you know, we'd have it no other way. That's just, we'd like to be, I always used to joke, even when the OJ trial was going on, the fact that it was a trial of the century, like at the time they called it that, we were like, hell yeah, when we get in trouble, the whole world notices. we lean into the villain thing. We got to, if you go to a school like USC or Miami or a few of the others where it's just like people just kind of looking out. My goodness. You know, and maybe at the end of the show also mention I'm going to a spring game of sorts next week. But if we have time at the end, we'll talk about that. You know, nothing major there. But let's get to the NFL draft. This is the time when NFL draft picks rejoice. The hour of judgment is at hand. NFL owners, managers, coaches will attempt to decide which among the draft eligible players deserve to be crowned with a ridiculous guaranteed contract. Now, we all have an idea of who the top pick's going to be, top five, top 10, but what about the guys who might surprise? Obviously, the patron saint of this is late sixth rounder from Michigan, Tom Brady, the pride of San Mateo. You know, I think they should change the name of San Mateo to San Tomas just to kind of like, just to honor that particular relationship there. But let's see here. It's, how did you construct this? Like when we're looking at under the radar, I actually started to look at almost categorically, but you could easily just start picking, throwing darts at players who we've seen and we think that just don't get the attention. But how did you approach this?
Yeah, the best way that I approached this was I tried to look at prospects that were generally not considered top five at their position. There's exceptions. I mean, again, you know, like linebackers one where nobody on the CBS Sports draft board is like in the top 40 or so, right? So like, you know, I did a little bit of cheating potentially there, but you know, that was the biggest way that I looked. So I tried to look for guys who were generally outside of the top five of their position group, depending on the position, outside of the top 50, maybe in terms of the overall draft board. And guys who were just awesome in college, right? Guys who I think that, you know, so much of the NFL draft is about measurables and is about testing. And I wanted to try and pull the curtain back and say, look, I think this guy just might be good at football. I think this guy might just translate well. Now, again, sometimes when you don't have the athletic upside, it means that you won't be like an all-pro player. But hey, I think that this is a player who will stick around, who just knows how to play the position, who knows how to do things at a high level. And I think ultimately that's kind of how I put my board together. We each picked five. And so that's kind of how I went about mine.
Excellent. Yeah. So I know when I was kind of approaching this, I also kind of looked at sort of, you know, categories like exactly who's being undervalued and maybe for reasons that are almost outside of their, you know, aren't faults of their own. Sometimes you get a class that's very heavy in a particular position. So when I started to approach this, I'm like, okay, well, this is well documented as a very wide receiver heavy class. So you're going to get, you know, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze. There's some guys out there as well. You can maybe even, you know, you could even almost look at the top five and say, like, there's going to be a fifth receiver, while that still might be in the first round, might have been higher had it not been for those other guys, in which case you could talk about someone like a Brian Thomas, who's going to be overshadowed a bit, obviously, by his teammate Malik Nabers. But I ended up almost looking at, you know, a couple guys like Texas. The two wide receivers from Texas obviously had great combines, but I don't know how much higher they can go when you've got all these other guys above them. Xavier Worthy's obviously the initial one on that list. Obviously, A.D. Mitchell, we can talk about him as well. But he's got the speed. He's got a lot of that natural talent. But people ding him on you know, his frame and his overall drops. But I thought a receiver like Xavier Worthy is a good example of a guy who, if he becomes a success in the NFL, and again, maybe not, we're not talking Pro Bowler necessarily, but someone who has a good career, people will just look back and say, like, well, yes. Did you see what he did at Texas? Did you see what he did at the Combine? So there were no surprises there. So I kind of started there. Somebody who isn't necessarily going to be, I don't know how far back in the draft, but someone who might be close to the front, who might have been higher had it not been for how talented this particular class is at the position.
No, I think that's a good way to handle it. So with that said, do you want to go to your first one?
Oh, that was my first one.
Oh, Xavier Worthy. Okay, yeah,
Xavier Worthy. Yeah, sorry, I was debating about who I was going to pick, because I got so many wide receivers into this. I was like, I don't want to make these all wide receivers. Because there were other guys I was considering, too. There was, like, Jeremiah Burton, there was Xavier Leggett, there was Jalen Polk. Like, similar, like, you're being overshadowed by your teammate, and maybe not quite as big. But I decided Xavier Worthy only because of the speed he displayed at the combine, and just the fact that he was a good receiver on a great team. And maybe some people are giving yours a little bit too much more credit for how he did when he was a solid receiver.
No, I think that's a really good pick. You know, the other thing that you have to say about Xavier Worthy is that he's a dynamic punt returner. Like, he is going to stick in the league for 10 years, even if it's just on special teams, which obviously I expect to also stick at receiver as well. You look at the CBS Sports Draft Board, we have him at number 31 overall, number 7 receiver in the class, which, yeah, is a testament to just how crazy this class is that somebody like that is the number 7 player at receiver. Look, I think the big question for him moving to the NFL level, and I've gotten to cover him since his freshman year at Texas, obviously being down here in Texas. I think the big question is kind of mentally, how does he translate? There were times during his tenure at Texas where he would be a little checked out or be a little unhappy, especially look back at like Steve Sarkisian's first season. And, you know, once he kind of felt like he proved himself, he kind of acted a little like he had made it. Now, the NFL is a different animal, right? You are trying to prove yourself against the best in the world every single week. And I actually think that that will probably translate a little better than potentially just translating to Texas, where he steps in and is wide receiver one from the second he steps on campus. But from a skill perspective, there's no doubt. I think the other piece that you have to like is that this is the kind of receiver who 5 years ago is not in the conversation to be a first round pick, because you're like, well, if I'm going to pick a first round receiver, it has to be this big X receiver, this 6'3", 225 pounds. That's what a wide receiver looks like. Well, now all of a sudden, these slot guys, you know, you obviously make the comparison to a Devontae Smith or somebody like that. A Jalen Waddle comes to mind. You know, these are players who are potential game breakers in the right offense. I do think with Xavier Worthy specifically, fit is going to be important. I think that he is going to need to end up in an offensive system that knows how to wreak havoc from the slot. But if he does, I agree. I think that he has the potential to be one of the more undervalued players in this draft.
So where did you take your selection for your first? And I admit mine weren't out entirely in order. I'm not saying like this is my number one underrated guy, but how about you? How did you approach your first one?
Yeah, I am going to pick my receiver with my first pick to kind of stick in that mold. I'm going with another player that I covered. Is this just going to be the list of guys that I got a chance to cover? Jacob Cowing at Arizona. He was a star at UTEP, like came out of nowhere. Actually, funny story with him, I got to write about him when I was at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. He actually did get some interest from big schools like Oregon and Texas coming out of school. He's from the Phoenix area. But he had like an academic situation that was likely to get resolved, but it wasn't on the timeline that people wanted it to get resolved. And so ultimately he ends up at UTEP, is just a superstar right from day one at UTEP. It's a huge part of them making a bowl game. And then transfers to Arizona, gets a little overshadowed, kind of like you mentioned with Xavier Worthy, by Tetaroya McMillan, but still a fantastic player, a huge part of them going and winning 10 games. And I think that, again, he is the kind of dynamic slot player that I feel like is a little undervalued as you translate to the NFL. He's not big, right? He's 5'10", 5'11", 175, and he doesn't have the 4.2 whatever speed that Xavier Worthy had. But I think that he is just a technician when it comes to his route running. He's able to find creases. He's able to make stuff happen after the catch. And so ultimately, I mean, I just think that he is somebody who he could get picked in the fourth round potentially. And again, I think he could stick around the NFL for a long time.
I think that's a great piece. And I, Another guy I've been thinking about who has a certain level of versatility, only because you mentioned that talking about Xavier Worthy, and I think his size is going to be a bit of concern, but people, especially teams, love his attitude, love his approach. I've talked to him before. He's a great guy overall. He just seems like he's got a good hand on his shoulder. Is Mike Sanders still the Michigan quarterback?
He was on my list. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, just because I think he's a guy, again, he's got good safety, good DB. He's got special teams versatility. But I think, again, it's that attitude that I think wins him over. I mean, because some people flunk the interview and they don't really talk about it. Some people, maybe when we get to talking about my favorite draft bust, you know, it might have been, attitude certainly was a part of it. But I think he's going to be on there only because, again, I think he gets knocked a little bit on size, but the heart is what's strong. But I mean, I think he's got a lot of talent that could keep him in the league for a while. Again, maybe not a Pro Bowler, but someone who's going to be you could see him as a league veteran, just being a part of a program.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one because, like you said, I think his greatest skill is his intangibles, is his leadership, is the attitude that he brings. And so, you know, you mention a player like that. It's the sort of guy that you keep on the roster. Like, who's that Patriots player who was like an all-time great special teams player? The one who just retired last year. Do you know who I'm talking about? But I think that he, like, at worst, you kind of view him like that, right? Where he brings an attitude and he brings kind of this like edge to his game and leadership and obviously, again, I think that he certainly has the ability to function as an NFL corner, or maybe a nickel might be a better role for him. He just has such a nose for the ball. He's a playmaker. He was able to make plays both at the line of scrimmage, even though he's a smaller guy, and also in the field. I think that he's one of those players who's just going to find a way to figure it out. He's an older player, and this is going to be a dynamic that I'm fascinated by heading into this NFL draft, especially is how are older players viewed by NFL teams? Because I think there's this idea that, well, you got to draft a 20 or 21 year old because then you get him for 10 years and you can develop them. But, like, look at the NFL right now. We were talking before the show, you know, between all the undrafted free agents and also the underclassmen and the people who are drafted, it's like 900 guys that are going to be trying to make a roster right now, not counting all the players who are already in the NFL. So, to me, I think that youth has never been less valuable in an NFL draft pick because... like, what is the reality that you just, again, we'll put quarterback aside and maybe like top end wide receiver ones aside. If you're drafting a cornerback or a safety, like, what's the chances in general that they're going to be on your team for 13 years? That's just not real at this point. And so if you draft somebody who's 24, but knows how to play the position and you don't have to develop them, I think that that's a huge potential inefficiency in the market in some ways. And Mike Sanders still, to me, kind of fits that role.
I just want to thank our producer, Joey, pointed out Matthew Slater. That's who we were trying to
Matthew Slater. Oh, yeah. A Patriots fan right over here. Of course, he would know off the top of his head. Yeah, but that's exactly what I was thinking of. Matthew Slater, you know, who like... is considered an all-time great New England Patriot because of his ability on special teams alone. He played a little bit from scrimmage as well on defense, but he was primarily a special teams gunner. And I think that Mike Sanders still might just be that kind of player if things go the right way.
Absolutely. You know, talking about age and potentially, well, I mean, one part of age, and I do get this, is people wear down with time. I mean, when you're in your 20s, you don't quite realize that. When you're in your teens, you don't quite realize that. But when you get to your 40s, 50s, beyond, suddenly your body, parts of it may not work quite as well as you thought they would because of decisions you were making when you were younger. But, you know, just speaking on a macro level, I think a lot of the NFL teams are a little more wary of that. And that's probably why, for example, some of the positions are undervalued compared to where they were 10 years ago, at least in terms of what they're willing to pay. But going to a guy who I think I debated about including him because he is, by all accounts, one of the stars heading into the draft. But we've watched him sink a little bit in his position rankings. And when we're talking about the amount of money that's being thrown at the very top, he's going to be probably paid less then, for example, Caleb Williams is, okay, probably number one. He's been number one. He's probably going to be number one, and that money's going to be there. But Michael Penix Jr., I felt like I should bring up a guy like that where, I mean, at this point, I've seen him go as low as like sixth in among the available quarterbacks. At, you know, with Bo Nix, obviously J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, all of those guys kind of jumping up ahead of them. And I know that's part of where age and just the injury history comes into play there, because that's also another parallel thing. Sometimes you might, and again, I'm not saying that the NFL teams are wrong at all for thinking this way, but sometimes when a guy's had some injuries, you're like, well, we know we're not going to probably get as much out of him. It's almost like the actuary, the math wizards who figure out your insurance rates. Like, they know the likelihood of how long you're going to be able to do something is lower. But you do wonder, someone like a Michael Penix Jr., who has just that incredible playmaking ability, who's just his throwing ability, everything you could say about him, we've seen it. And we've seen it on display. And unfortunately, just had one off game, had a really awkward time to have an off game. He's a guy I'm going to just sort of put as a potential undervalued, because if he ends up being, because again, he's a guy where if suddenly he ends up being a superstar and maybe burns out a little sooner than some others would expect, but ends up being an NFL impact, not going to be a shocker. If he ends up being better than J.J. McCarthy, there's going to be a lot of I told you shows. That's all I'm going to say about that. And I hope they both have great careers. But he's someone I'm going to put up there as a potential sleeper in a way that is not traditionally a sleeper. But what do you think? I mean, am I going too far with that, or?
Yeah, okay, let's have the big picture quarterback discussion right now. Let's kind of touch on everybody. So obviously Caleb is going to go 1-1 by the time that you are listening to the show. Like, it probably has already happened. In fact, probably multiple of these players that we're going to mention will have been mentioned at this point. So heading into Thursday, looking at CBS Sports draft board, number two, they've got Drake May. I think that's correct. Number three, they have Jaden Daniels. How do you feel about the Jaden Daniels thing? I feel like it's, I don't want to say it's come out of nowhere, but it just, it feels like the hype has gotten pretty high. Because even just to throw this out there, Jaden Daniels is our number six overall prospect. And then the next quarterback is J.J. McCarthy, who's our number 20 overall prospect. Do you view Jaden Daniels as being closer to Caleb Williams than to maybe that second tier of quarterback?
I'm very fearful of that one. I think I completely acknowledge I could be wrong on this, but my concern with Jaden Daniels is he stepped up big time this last season. No doubt about that. I mean, there's been arguments about whether he should have had the Heisman or not. We'll set those aside. But clearly the talent was there. He was one of the top quarterbacks, no doubt, in college football. I get concerned about some of the comparisons that are drawn to who they remind him of in the NFL. I'm like, I'm not sure I would go that far just yet. You know, don't be careful of trying to imagine. It's almost like dating in relationships. Don't imagine like who you're going to turn this guy into. Like, the guy you're dating now is the guy you're seeing. He's not a project. And especially if you're paying that much money for a guy you're thinking, oh, the upside's really good. I'm a little more worried about that, because The talent he had around him. I mean, Malik Nabers, hands down, one of the best receivers that they're going to be out there. We were just talking about the level of the receivers that are going into this draft. And he's good on his feet, yes. He's got a lot of those raw talent, but it kind of goes back to the same question of whether or not that, and maybe it is kind of like the same Heisman question. Does he have that innate wow factor that kind of steps him up, or is he just a guy who is consistent? And that, to be fair, NFL guys, that's what you kind of want. You want a guy who's going to be there and doing exactly what you need him to do. But yeah, it's fascinating to see his where he is now in the projected draft, because I'm a little surprised by that. But could be wrong.
Yeah, I think for me, when I look at Jaden Daniels, I see a player who didn't have to throw into windows all that often, whose offense let him throw to open receivers for the most part. Wasn't as much of a yards after catch guy as like Bo Nix, obviously, but it was a big yards after catch guy as well. So and the other thing that I don't love about Jaden Daniels that's been brought up, and I think kind of clarifies in some ways my question about him, is he isn't a player who uses his legs to create passing opportunities. He's somebody who gives up on passing opportunities and then uses his legs. You know, you compare that to a Caleb Williams, who, of course, always has his eyes downfield. You compare that to a Drake May, who floats in the pocket, but is in the pocket and is looking to throw and knows when to tuck and run, but isn't just running. You compare that even to Michael Penix. I think that to go back to Penix for a second, Penix is 5 on our board. He's number 30 overall behind Daniels, McCarthy, and then Penix. So just to throw it out there, right? So yesterday, Deion Sanders put out a tweet, as he often does, kind of being like, I don't understand why this guy's getting hated on so much. Why is he not? And the answer is like, he's old and has injuries. Like that's what it is. Like he suffered so many injuries in his college career, and he has a very thin frame that you don't know if you can add a whole lot more meat to keep him more protected. So that's the reason. It's not because of his ability or his ability to throw the ball. I do think so. Penix was actually on my list as well. I swear you're just I think you're just copying my list, but I think for me, he is a potential high upside candidate, right? Like, I mean, not to make the comparison as a player, but like, you know, like a Dak Prescott, where you're like, you just kind of look and you see the pieces and you're like, maybe when you put him in a more professionalized offense, it'll actually be good for him in some ways. And the other piece too is that, you know, compare Michael Penix and the offense that he ran in to Jaden Daniels, to even Bo Nix, to even in a lot of ways Caleb Williams. And Michael Penix's offense was substantially more professionalized than some of these other guys. In fact, his offensive coordinator is now the offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks because they think that it's translatable. So mm-hmm. I think that he's going to be able to do a lot of stuff at a high level. Again, it's going to be about his ability to protect himself because Michael Penix is a great athlete. We saw that at Indiana, but they scaled it back at Washington because of those injuries. Now you're going to have to kind of figure out, is this somebody who can protect themselves as a runner? Obviously he's had shoulder issues in the past as well. He's an older player. But I think that again, this is one of those guys that I would not take him like in the top 15 necessarily, just not because of his ability, but because of just like, I think what you're asking and needing from him. I'd put Bo Nix in the same category. JJ McCarthy we'll get to in a second. But like, I think that he is a potential high floor guy with some ceiling as well. So if I'm a team that feels like I've got a below average quarterback situation, and I think that maybe I can take myself to the next level with just like slightly above average play, like Michael Penix is a guy that I'm looking pretty hard at to take a swing on. To touch on JJ McCarthy for a second, a player who suddenly is in like the top 7 discussion. I mean, he's a very high floor player. He's not going to make many mistakes. I think that the question is when he's going to be asked to do things consistently at a high level, that's where I kind of run into issues putting him in that top group. We have met number 20 on our board and the number 4 quarterback. I think that's fine. I have no problem with that rating. I have a little bit of a problem saying we're going to draft him at number 7 to be our franchise quarterback. And I think this is also just a big picture conversation about, you know, what are you looking for when you sort of go and draft a quarterback? Are you always, with any pick, trying to draft a franchise player? Or are you trying to draft a player who can start for you? I think those are two different conversations. Because I think that JJ McCarthy is a player who can start in the NFL for 10 years. But like, and this is going to sound like a negative, but it's not. But like, is he like high-end Andy Dalton, right? Like, is he kind of mid-tier Kirk Cousins? Is that enough for you to be drafting him at number 7 versus if you draft him at number 17? I think that maybe you feel great about that. So this is going to be a fascinating quarterback class for so many reasons. But again, at the end of it, I'm just pretty thrilled to be getting your boy Caleb Williams to my Chicago Bears. Did you know that actually the Chicago Bears are the only franchise in the history of the NFL to never produce a single quarterback to throw for either 4,000 yards in a season or 30 touchdowns in a season. No Bears quarterback has ever done either of those things.
Well, I don't know if he'll be the one to break that, but we'll see. We'll see.
I am confident. I don't know if he'll be good, but he will throw for more yards than that.
Just to go back to one thing that made me think about, for example, with J.J. McCarthy and Penix and some of these other guys, you know, there is that saying that sometimes for the long run of a quarterback's success, it does help that if they're drafted a little lower and the team's kind of counting on them to be an eventual heir apparent or see where they build up. Because I still remember the 2005 draft. Where we watched, because I saw him play against USC and I was like, who the hell is this guy? I watched him tie the NCAA record for consecutive connections in his passes. Like he did not have until the game was on the line in the final goal line stand did he finally start like overthrowing and the defense got to him. And that was Aaron Rodgers. He dropped in the draft. People thought he was going to go really high. He ends up going, you know, was like in the mid 20s to Green Bay. Brett Favre was already there. It wasn't like they were going to shove him out of the way. But, you know, arguably that let him develop, get used to being in the NFL. And then, you know, say what he will about all the other stuff, the sideline stuff. But he's obviously a talented NFL quarterback. So you wonder for some of these guys being in that kind of a circumstance, you know, you might have an opportunity to blossom in a way that you might not have. Yeah, exactly. You're now our franchise quarterback. Are you ready for it? No, you know, they think they are, but you know, the rest of their ability doesn't say so. But absolutely, you know, so we've touched on quarterbacks, which I kind of launched us into. Who's the next person kind of on your list, and how did you approach them?
Yeah, I'm going to combine two players from one team who are not the same position, but close enough. I was actually a little disappointed. I thought I was a little more on the cutting edge with this player, but CBS Sports has caught up to me and ranked him as their number two tight end in this draft. Ben Sinnott from Kansas State at tight end and Cooper Beebe at left guard from Kansas State as well. These are two players who were critical to Kansas State's run to the Big 12 championship in 2022. Ben Sinnott, I've joked repeatedly. I don't know how he didn't have 15,000 yards in his career, because every time I watched Kansas State, he was running away with the ball from somebody. He is just such a consistent player. He's more of an H-back. Like, he is not necessarily the new style of like, kind of tight ends who are actually wide receivers or slot guys. Like Brock Bowers is kind of a slot, like, to be perfectly honest, but like Ben Sinnott is a like a backfield receiving threat. He's somebody who will block at a high level. He's not a huge player. He's 245 right now. I think that if he could add maybe 10 pounds, I'd feel even better about him, but he is somebody who I think could stick in the NFL for like 10 years. And Cooper Beebe, I got some messages from Kansas State fans last year. They're like, so are you going to vote for Cooper Beebe for offensive player of the year in the Big 12? Because he's a really, really good player as an interior lineman. It's hard to anchor an offensive line from the guard position. It's just a little easier from either center or left tackle, but he was just one of those types of players. He moved well. They were able to build everything that they wanted around him. He was such a huge part of Deuce Vaughn 2 years ago turning into a great player. They constantly ran behind him, of Will Howard turning into a quarterback that now Ohio State wants. Avery Johnson now looks like the next guy in line. So those two guys are players who I think we could be looking back and be like, huh, they've been in the league for 12 years. How did that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have warm feelings for K-State fans. I've always had good encounters with them, and I'm excited to get to go to Ireland in a couple of seasons. We just found out to play.
Very weird.
So every man will be a Wildcat in Dublin. You know, we'll talk about a few more of our picks when we come back here on the College Football Survivor Show. So as we kind of go to our last couple of selections, I was also trying to think of underrated or at least potential sleeper selections where they're coming from a kind of a circumstance. And one of those is being kind of at the wrong school. In some ways, not because you were not a talent, it's just maybe you were a late bloomer and just decided football was something you wanted to pursue at a later date, and you just had all the raw ability to get some attention, but not those that are going through the whole rigmarole of middle school and high school and getting all of those attentions. And that goes to someone from the Ivy League, Yale's offensive lineman, Karan Amagaji. And I apologize, I'm so bad with names, and it's, again, ironic considering my own name, but we'll set that aside. He's one of these guys who, again, he didn't take up the sport seriously until he was already in a junior, and so he wasn't pursued much as a recruit. And another problem is he's at like almost second to the wide receiver, maybe equal to the wide receiver. It's a position where there's a lot of great talent already out there at FBS programs. So with that, you know, he gets knocked a bit because he wasn't able to necessarily try his skill against other FBS players, but he's got the talent. And when you see a lot of, you know, he's got the size, athleticism, length, he's light on his feet. He's got a lot of those things that are what draft scouts are looking for. And, you know, we were talking about wear and tear. That's a great thing. He hasn't actually played as much. So what we're seeing is someone who hasn't necessarily gone out there and maybe given and started the process of wearing down his body in a way where you might not get all the years you'd like out of an offensive lineman. So I'm going to put him and kind of as a representative of some of those guys who are at teams that may not be on the radar, but they're always, we've always seen guys, even in D2, get selected and things like that. But I'm going to put him up there as one of my potential sleeper hits for whoever gets him off the board.
No, I like that pick a lot. Like you said, I think that when you have some guys who are, especially on the offensive line, who are a little moldable, I think that that can actually be a pretty big benefit. And, you know, just to go ahead and stereotype, I feel like coming from the Ivy League probably means he's a quick learner, right? That's probably just what you have to assume with that. But I'm going to stick in the trenches for my second to last pick. This was a player who was top five in college football this year, I'd make the argument, but has kind of slipped down draft boards a little bit. He hasn't tested the greatest, but I think we're overthinking it. Tavondre Sweat from Texas. He was a one-man wrecking crew, won the Outland Trophy, was basically a top five national run defense almost by himself. His teammate Byron Murphy is actually the number one rated defensive lineman in the class right now by CBS Sports. And I do think that there's some reasons to think that Murphy might have more upside at the NFL level than Sweat, even though Sweat was better as a college player. But I think that this is almost like a positional value thing where when you look at Sweat, they're like, well, he has to play nose, and how much value is there? You know, like you start seeing some of these nose guys and they go closer to fourth round than being in the first two round conversation. But I just think that when you have a player who can just fill gaps the way that that guy can, and at his size, he's listed at 362 and he moves so well for his size. Like I remember him walking into the Big 12 title game and he has this like giant pendant that says make him sweat, and he is so wide. It is like he's inhumanly wide, it feels like, for a defensive tackle. I just think he's going to find a way to stick around. So look, if it ends up being later on that somebody gets him, I think that, again, he is somebody who I have very little question about whether he's going to have a chance to stick around. And so I'm excited to see him, and I think somebody's going to get a steal.
It's wild to me that he isn't higher than he is, only because that's a classic example of, I remember his college career, I remember how terrifying he is, and yeah, he could easily be, yeah, that might be one where people look back and like, how did he not go higher? I'm going to round my group out with kind of almost a position where inevitably someone's going to be a sleeper hit, where people are going to get way more for their value than they expected. And it's only because it's fallen out of vogue, and it's the running back position. And there was a time
I was thinking the exact same thing.
The number one pick would be a running back. I remember those days. Pepperidge Farms remembers. So you could almost look at the entire, I mean, I don't even know who to pick. I'm going to just, you know, you almost look at, you know, you got someone like Jonathan Brooks from Texas. You got Braylon Allen from Wisconsin, Marshawn Lloyd for USC, you know, Ray Davis from Kentucky, anyone, Bucky Irving from Oregon, any of those guys, they're probably not going to be, you know, they're not going to be high in the draft, but picking one of them at this point, you know, someone's going to have a good career, maybe not an epic career, but you could get someone in this group that dollar for dollar, your value of what you're going to earn, especially on the offense, is going to be more than met from selecting them. So I almost feel like I want to give a collective hug to all of these great running backs that we've seen in college football who potentially could go out there and just make a name for themselves. And just only now, because running backs are, And admittedly, we've seen a lot of them not work out because of injuries, because of just the nature of the position. There's going to be someone in this group. There is inevitably going to be someone in this group that's going to have an epic NFL career. And they'll eventually get their payday on their next contract, but won't be right out the gate.
Oh, I need you to pick one though. I need you to call your shot and pick which one, because like you said, there's going to be a couple probably that end up contributing, but I want you to pick one.
You know, if I'm going to pick one running back, I'm going to go a little bit, I'm going to go with the dream story here, and I'm going to go with Corey Schrader from Mizzou, because this is a kid who climbed up from Division II to become, you know, first team All-American and SEC stud running back. That's someone who's got that hunger, that drive. I mean, he has gone out there proven himself again and again. So if you're looking for someone who, you know, again, he could go out there, the NFL, and just prove himself out there, and just people are going to be like, he had the right attitude. He built his game up and rose to that level. I'm going to go with Cody Schrader only because he's done it now at a level that is, you know, making a lot of things. He's changed almost the transfer portal equation, because it's like, are you willing to look outside of D1? Maybe, because you could get the next Cody Schrader.
No, it's a great pick. I remember when he transitioned up to Missouri and they're like, yeah, maybe we'll find some role for him. Who knows? But he worked out fantastic. I think that he's also interesting too, because he's one of those tough runners, like somebody who's just very physical, runs through contact. And I think those guys often translate pretty well to the NFL because they're already kind of used to fighting for the small yards. I'm always going to remember when Leonard Fournette was drafted and he was just like, wait, what do you mean that there are tackles in front of me? I'm not used to that. I don't know how to look around them or anything. So sometimes I think that can actually be an advantage. It's interesting. There's a couple guys certainly on the list. I think I'm going to go with Will Shipley from Clemson. I think that he has had, and honestly, most of Clemson's offensive players, I think that he's had a very weird narrative around him because of how that Clemson offense went. But I think that when I look at him, I don't want to compare him skill-wise to Jahmyr Gibbs, but I think that role-wise, he has the ability to be that. With his ability to catch balls out of the backfield, he's also a pretty tough runner. He's had some injury concerns, but nothing insane. I think the biggest red flag for me is how many carries he's had during his Clemson career, because they have not been able to do anything during his career. But I think that Shipley still, and he's only number 204 on our CBS board, number 13 running back, so like a lot lower than I would have expected. I'll also say too, though, I mean, there's nobody on the running back board who's in our top 60 overall. Trey Benson and Jonathan Brooks are kind of our consensus top two right now. Braylon Allen, the only other player in the top 100. So I do want to ask you about one player and before we kind of finish up. Blake Corum, what do you kind of think of him? Because he is this great college player, plays in a very pro-style offense. One, though, has injury concerns. Two, has a lot of tread off those tires because of how much he had to carry the ball. And again, like, he's such a second effort guy, and he's a second effort guy in a way where I'm like curious whether it's a positive or a negative when he goes to that next level.
Well, when the talent of everyone you're going against suddenly increases to a level that is higher than I think a lot of players realize until they get in there and that have that welcome to the NFL moment, that could be something that hangs him up. But again, he's a guy like Sandristel where it's like he's such, you talk to the guy and you're like, wow, you've got a great head on your shoulders. You could be a leader. So he could be one of those. I don't know if he would necessarily even be a permanent starter or something like that, but someone who just stays on the roster, does what needs to be done. Health notwithstanding, you know, who could do that and have that right attitude. But yeah, it's tough because he's also a small guy. He's one of those classic players where you finally meet him in person, you're like, oh wow, yeah, no, you are listed at that height. But I just, you know, I'm always used to guys being enormous. You know, it's like when you meet an NBA player and you're like, wow, I thought you were short, but you're just short compared to Shaq, you know, in that kind of a circumstance. But yeah, no, I wonder how that will translate when the level of talent of who he's going against is going to be at a level that just, you know, there were some good defenses in the Big Ten, but they're not NFL defenses, not at all. That actually makes an interesting kind of transition to just sort of bust, because we were talking about that. You touched on that earlier because of how hard it is to get on an NFL roster. And I think when you do those numbers, it just blows your mind every time. Because I previously heard, you know, we've talked about that. There's like almost 40,000 people playing college football every year, and you're just not going to make an NFL. I mean, the NFL roster odds are really low. There's only there's just slightly under 1,700 players on rosters, and because they have that hard cap at any given time. But yeah, there's practice squads and such, but that doesn't always mean you're going to make a roster and all of that. So you got 257 picks. You know, each team gets between 20 and 30 undrafted free agents afterwards, and you know, if you conservatively, you know, multiply that, that's like 640 players. So you're talking about 900 potential new players vying for spots. That's more than half of NFL players on rosters in a season. So inevitably, there's going to be busts, and some of them are going to bomb, and some are going to bomb more than others. So we thought we'd really quickly kind of just say, we're not going to go through an exhaustive list. There's plenty of those out there, but who in your mind, who is your favorite or more infamous NFL bust?
Yeah, well, so we actually did this story, too, for CBSSports.com, so make sure and check that out as well. Everybody from our team kind of gave theirs. My answer on that list was a player that I covered, and that's Corey Coleman from Baylor. You know, he was just so electric, won the Biletnikoff. I thought, you know, look, there were some concerns about the offense translating to the next level, but Kendall Wright, Terrence Williams, Josh Gordon even, like, there had been good players at receiver to come out of that system. And I was like, okay, well, Corey, I feel like, is maybe the most complete player coming out of that group. And I still think it's the Cleveland Browns' fault. I'm not going to put that on Corey Coleman, but at the same time, it just did not work. He was out of the league just a few years later. And very unfortunate one. I'm not going to go with that one, though. But first, why don't you give me yours?
Well, the first real season I got hardcore into college football, I watched Washington State. I remember I watched them defeat the Trojans my freshman year. And I'm like, man, are they any good? And people said, like, they were awful last year. But little did we know, they had a quarterback who was actually quite good, at least in the college level. So they made it all the way to the Rose Bowl. They were 10-1 when they entered that Rose Bowl. They lost to eventual co-national champ Michigan. And some might argue they should have been consensus, but we'll set aside the honoring the Nebraska head coach thing later. So again, third in the Heisman voting, Sammy Baugh Trophy, Ryan Leaf. Oh my gosh, there was a whole controversy going into that draft. Who's going to go first? Peyton Manning, who was second in the Heisman Trophy rank, and actually his Tennessee Vols lost to Nebraska, the other co-champ. So, I mean, we had two great teams, two great quarterbacks. There was a debate about, you know, who had more talent around them. Manning certainly had a more talented Tennessee team around him. Wazoo was more relying on Leaf's ability himself. To his credit, Bill Walsh said he would have passed on both and gone with Michigan man Brian Greasy. But I think that was better that the top two teams. So Ryan Leaf, for those who aren't aware, he was big, had the arm talent, had everything, but just this is a classic attitude problem. Immature. There were infamous clips out of there yelling at reporters. He didn't take criticism well from coaches. He didn't want to learn from his mistakes. We basically had a guy who... And I warn people when I teach them, like in just an academic setting, like, you know, I compare it to the NFL. I say, you know, you can be raw talent when you're in high school. You were just the smartest kid, no problem. And you get into an honors program when I get you at a state university, all honors kids from high school. So you're now competing with a bunch of people. Raw talent might get you by there, fine. Then you go to, let's say, you know, law school or something. You're going to be with a bunch of kids like you. So raw talent is only going to get you so far. And the NFL is like that too. You know, high school kid, college kid, you know, NFL kid. And this is it, you know, that willingness to keep learning, to keep growing. And in a lot of ways, Ryan Leaf was that. And so he didn't last long. I mean, that whole, it's so funny too. There were two guys in that draft who were also big busts in the top five, who should be thankful Ryan Leaf was in that draft as well. Because let's, you know, Peyton Manning goes to the Colts, gets $11 million guaranteed, $48 million contract. Obviously, kept raking in the dough because he was an exceptional quarterback. Ryan Leaf got $11.2 million guaranteed, but didn't last very long. Then you get a bust where you feel bad for him. Because Florida State's defensive end, Andre Wadsworth, just an incredible guy. 6'4", could bench 500, squat 700. kind of an awkward start. He held out until the day before the season opener, but got a guaranteed $10.5 million, had a good rookie season, then got injured. Classic problem. You know, it's defensive end. You're going to wear out. So lasted 3 years in the league. Charles Woodson went number four. So Michigan man, you know, the last defensive player to win the Heisman Trophy in 97. I mean, he, great, you know, pro Hall of Famer, everything they got out of him. And then the other, this, now we're going back to the running back thing. The number five pick was Curtis Ennis from Penn State. Made one start, then had a knee injury, and then fizzled his entire career. Number five pick in the draft. So when we're talking about why and running backs are undervalued, there have been every draft for every year would have a guy like that, and you felt it kind of crushed you because it wasn't any of his fault. It's just the nature of the sport. But Ryan Leaf, Ryan Leaf. And I'll keep saying that because yeah. Every now and again they'll try to read. There's always a story that he's coming back. He's a story of someone, and I'm like, you know what? There's so many people in this sport. Write about somebody else because that whole story just kind of I get annoyed by that.
I'm going to go with the quarterback as well for my pick. I'm going to go with the Rosen one, Josh Rosen. Ooh. I was so convinced that when he finally got into structure and into a good situation that he was going to thrive. He was thrown into such a mess at UCLA and just managed to keep making things work. And it felt like the things he did well were things that projected well to the next level too, just in terms of his ability to like move within the pocket, keep his eyes downfield. It seemed like he diagnosed pretty quickly. He just seemed like a smart guy just overall. So it just felt like, I mean, again, there were like the dumb stories of like, oh, he has a hot tub in his room. How serious?
I thought that was hilarious when he did that.
Like, that just feels like one of those like insanely dumb criticisms of somebody trying to talk themselves out of him being good.
Oh, he paints his nails. And, oh, yeah, that's going to totally affect his play.
But it just felt like, yeah, just put him in a decent situation and it would work. Now, granted, I want to be clear. He did not end up in a decent situation in Arizona. It was a total mess in the NFL, too, when he went there. And they gave up on him after 1 year to go draft Kyler Murray. But, like, he had other chances. Yeah, he had the opportunity to go somewhere else. It's different when you're not that team's draft pick, of course. Like, when you're just a guy that they're bringing in on a flyer. But I mean, again, it was Cardinals, then Dolphins, then Bucks, then 49ers and Falcons and Browns and Vikings. Like, that's a lot of teams to get a shot at and not stick around. So I still kind of like in my heart of hearts believe that Josh Rosen, even in the NFL, deserved a little better than what he got. But also, like, it did not work. It did not happen. Did not come together. And unfortunately, Josh Rosen, total NFL draft bust.
That's a good pick. I like that pick. Cause yeah, that shocked me for the very similar reasons. Cause that was the whole thing. It's like, hey, he's on UCLA, but watch him in the NFL. He's going to be great. And didn't quite work out. So as we kind of wrap this up, I mean, I'll just really quickly acknowledge we got a couple of more spring games coming up this weekend, one or two notable ones. I mean, Oregon certainly is a contender, so we'll see how that's looking over there. We've got Dylan Gabriel's out there. It'll be really interesting to see how the quarterback, you know, maybe a small battle with you know, another UCLA quarterback, see how that goes. And Oklahoma State, contender for the Big 12, certainly is also having their practice. And you've got a couple of new coaches, UCLA, since we're just talking about them, with Deshaun Foster, Arizona with Brent Brennan. And we have some G5 teams out there, my beloved Akron Zips and UMass, of course. So we'll also have their spring game. But I wanted to just mention this. Next week, I am going to a spring game. Before the show, we were talking about it, and the guess was I was going to Oregon. I'm like, no, not this weekend. Next weekend. And I want to bring this up because it's a fascinating game. I'm going to Southern Oregon University in Ashland, Oregon, because for the first time in, I think it's like almost 30 years, they're doing the Mills Bowl. What is the Mills Bowl? Well, they had a coach there, Chuck Mills. Chuck Mills, when he was at Utah State, and he'd been at Wake Forest, and he'd been at a couple of other teams. He took a team, the very first college football team from the United States, to go tour Japan. So he's always had this connection with all the, he was the right kind of guy. I mean, he only died a few years ago, but this is the kind of guy who wanted to build the sport. So he always invited coaches to come over from Japan and be on his, as like a I guess we call him an offensive analyst now, but you know, he kind of sabined up his team, but with Japanese guys to come in and kind of learn about what the sport was like. He ends up at an NAIA team in Ashland, Oregon, Southern Oregon University, the Raiders. He was there for the 80s, and a lot of these guys who ended up becoming great coaches in Japan learned from him. So for the first time since 1987, they're inviting the reigning national champions. Well, it isn't only because of the reigning national champions. It happens to be the best team in Japan that has won 7 consecutive national titles going into this year, has the tight connection with that university. So they're going to be playing an exhibition game, Japan's top college football team, against an NAIA program. And I absolutely decided I have to see this in person. This is going to be something to see. I'm going to try and interview some of the players and coaches from the Japanese team. I hope they have an interpreter. Otherwise, this is going to be really awkward. It's going to be lots of dumb looks and smiles and pointing and acting things out. I think it's going to be fun. So that's going to be my next weekend. I'm looking forward to that. I've never been to Southern Oregon. I've heard it's beautiful in the in that Rogue Valley area. So we'll see.
I'm just so fascinated to like hear what your wife thinks about your life. Like just you being like, I'm going to Ashland, Oregon next weekend. Hope that's okay. Like,
I check with her. I'm like, hey, would this work? Can we get childcare coverage for this? I mean, I'm lucky my in-laws live in town. I don't do as many. Like before I had kids. No. I one time, like, I'm the type of person who's like, I want to see how far north I can drive into Manitoba. And I rented a car and drove literally 980 miles. It was so far north. Minneapolis was the halfway point to New Orleans. So I literally, like, driving Minnesota to New Orleans, flip that around. I went north. It was so far north that at the end of May, there was a snowstorm. So I was like, whoa, I know I'm from Minnesota, but this is cold out here. Yeah. So no, before I had kids, I was more willing to do this. This is like that growth that comes out once your kids are more stable. Like, cause I got, you know, my kids are in junior high and fourth grade. They got their lives together. I don't feel like I can't leave the house for more than 24 hours. Like sometimes we get, they're a little younger.
Oh man. Yeah. I did my first night overnight away from my daughter on Monday when I hosted that award show, and it wasn't too bad, but I couldn't sleep at all. Like I was just like, I woke up, I think 3 times during the night. Cause I'm just like, this doesn't feel right. I don't know about
Do you ever have that moment where you think you heard a cry and you immediately like perk up? Like, it took years to get past that. Like, I could just be, like, relaxing and, like, not necessarily even sleeping, but just out somewhere and somebody else's baby makes a sound and I immediately, like, snap up, like, wait, no, not mine. Oh, goodness, thankfully.
I'm real lucky, even though our baby's only 3 months old, like, she rarely cries at night. Like, she mostly just hangs out at night. So, like, I actually am pretty much good from a sleep perspective. But, like, I just was there and I'm like, it's 5:30, but I can't get back to sleep. I guess I'll just do some work now. But anyway, so I went back home and I've slept much, much better with a baby in the room the last two nights. That's
awesome. Yeah, I remember how it kind of messes with our perception of things and what's right, what's wrong, especially when we're on our own. Oh my goodness. Well, everyone out there, we always thank you for listening to us. We hope you guys get a chance to enjoy the draft this week, if that's your thing. Want to thank our producer, Joey Aliberti, who's always out there helping us in the background. And we wanted to ask you, just if you can, like, rate, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on X and TikTok at CFB Survivor Show. He's Shehan J. Araja. You can find his work at CBSSports.com and at Shehan J. Araja on X and TikTok. I'm Bob Akairi. Thanks for listening.
The College Football Survivor Show, where playoff survival is always on the line.